From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, this is Intersection. I'm Sarah Shariari. Water is in headlines across the United States. From lead levels in Flint, Michigan, to Native peoples protesting an oil pipeline that would cross the Missouri River in North Dakota. Getting and maintaining clean water, and who has the right to make decisions that affect our waters, are questions at the heart of national debates. Here in the Midwest and across the Great Plains, many towns face pollution seeping into their water supplies. A big part of the problem, farming and ranching. But those industries are also crucial to the region. This week on Intersection, we'll hear from reporters from Harvest Public Media. Harvest reporters in Colorado, Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri traced the waterways that connect us all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. First, I talked with one of those reporters about the Watching Our Waters series. Here's Harvest reporter Grant Gerlach of NET News in Nebraska.
Water quality is one of these issues that has been going on for a long time in the Midwest. These water quality problems connected to fertilizer and pesticides that come from farm fields and other sources and end up in rivers and lakes and in groundwater in different parts of the region. So we wanted to try to connect these dots kind of across the Midwest and the plains and look at the different ways that these chemicals are getting into water, what we should be concerned about, and the ways that farmers are already trying to address the problem, different ways that scientists can suggest that farmers change what they're doing also to get a better handle on it.
What happens here is definitely not contained here in the Midwest. It affects people all along the riverways, all the way down to the Gulf.
Exactly. So you can see effects here. You can see local effects, and you can see how cities and communities have to address these problems on a local level. But then you also see the sort of cumulative impact on down the river as all these. I mean, you can think of the Mississippi River Basin like just this giant bathtub that drains, you know, like a third of the country, all the way from Montana to Pennsylvania and on down. So it's this massive amount of land and water coming off of all that land and across farm fields on all that land, pastures and cities, and ending up in one place in the Gulf of Mexico. So what goes into the water in Missouri, in Iowa, in Nebraska, it ends up there. It's all connected. So so it isn't just the local impact. You also have to look at what it looks like when you get to the end of the line down in the Gulf.
What surprised you when you were reporting?
I think I'm often interested and often surprised about how farmers look at these things. Farmers have a very pragmatic sense about these issues. They know about them. They're aware of their role in it. They may disagree at times on the steps they need to take or how much blame they deserve or that kind of thing. We were really interested in looking at what farmers are doing and what else they can do, and why, you know, reasons they may or may not be doing different things. And so I was interested in finding out more about that. I think we all were. And one of the interesting things that we found out was that farmers can be frustrated too at times by the slow pace of progress on these water quality problems. There are a number of farmers, including a farm family that I met in Nebraska, who are very progressive about using advanced technology called precision farming to apply very specific amounts of fertilizer on their field, which means that there's less fertilizer ending up in the water. There are farmers who are very progressive about using different conservation techniques, like planting buffer strips along waterways, which can filter out some of these chemicals, or planting cover crops on their fields, which grow when the crops aren't growing and can hold on to some of these chemicals so they don't end up in waterways.
And what about the dead zone in the Gulf? Why does it exist, and sort of why should we care?
Well, it is a very large ecological problem. So the dead zone is thousands of square miles in the Gulf of Mexico, a place that is a great fishing reservoir for the fishing industry, for the shrimp industry. and that's really been decimated by this issue. It's caused because of the fertilizers, the nutrients in the fertilizers that end up in the water, and that feeds these blooms of algae, and just these huge populations of algae pop up, and then they die, and as they decompose, it pulls oxygen out of the water. Just that natural process pulls out the oxygen, and it's not a good place for fish or wildlife. And so that's the result. And it's coming from those nutrients coming down the Mississippi River. It's not all from farming, but you know, around 2/3 of the nitrogen and phosphorus that contribute to this problem come from either crop farming or from livestock. And the other contributions come from wastewater systems from cities or from wastewater from factories. So there are other contributions, but the largest contribution is from agriculture. And that's the connection. So people should be worried because it's this sort of ecological disaster that's on our shores. It has a multi-billion dollar impact on those industries in the Gulf. And it ties directly back to practices in our region.
That was Harvest Public Media reporter Grant Gerlach, and this is Intersection on KBIA. Today we're listening to Watching Our Water, a series on the health of rivers that stretch across the Midwest all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. Here's Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon in Colorado.
I am here on the banks of the South Platte River up near Bailey, Colorado. Just took my shoes off. I'm actually going to wade into the river. Ooh, okay, it is cold. This water that I'm standing in filters down from the mountains, crisp and cool, and someday it's going to empty into the Gulf of Mexico. And while it makes its journey, it picks up some pretty nasty stuff. And that's causing a bunch of problems for fish in the Gulf and people in farm country. I'm gonna get out of here. My feet are completely numb. Rivers like this one pick up potentially dangerous levels of nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus. In high concentrations, they damage aquatic life and burden small towns that have to remove them. It's happening across the Mississippi watershed, which stretches from Pennsylvania to Colorado to Louisiana. And it's making the news.
When you see these signs, they're alarming. These warnings about the water, they're posted all over Burlington. And this is
scientists who work for the federal government have discovered a huge dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico.
A water warning for people living in the village of Erie, Illinois. Testing found high levels of nitrate.
One of the biggest concerns when it comes to water quality in our area is nitrate.
So nutrients are ending up concentrated in our water. But how?
So there's actually quite a few ways that nutrients or nitrogen compounds can end up in drinking water.
That's Andrew Ross, a water quality scientist with the Colorado Department of Public Health. He says sources include everything from natural deposits to the atmosphere to one really big one, human activities.
So that could be from sewage treatment systems, septic systems at homes, fertilizers on lawns, fertilizers in farms, livestock management.
Those last two, crop farms and livestock operations, are the biggest contributors to nutrient problems in the Gulf of Mexico. Nitrogen is plant food. Farmers spread it in the form of fertilizer to grow profitable crops. A 2008 study from scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey found that corn and soybean farming in the Mississippi River watershed is the largest contributor of nitrogen to the Gulf. Manure from livestock grazing on pasture is the biggest source of phosphorus.
It's really not a simple problem. It's a relatively complex problem.
Troy Bowder studies water quality at Colorado State University. He ends up talking to a lot of farmers about how to keep the fertilizer they put in their fields from ending up in streams or in groundwater. It isn't easy.
The soil plant water system is not an engineered system. It's a natural system, a natural ecosystem that the growers are trying to manage.
Farmers don't want to be causing pollution problems in the Gulf or in the rivers that cities depend on. And being less than careful is expensive.
there's definitely incentive for them not to apply too much or at the wrong time because they want maximum uptake of those nutrients into their crop production.
What makes it tough to control is that it's not just the actions of one farmer. It's the collective actions of tens of thousands of farmers affecting water quality. So far, no national regulations have been able to take into account the vast number of pollution sources and varied geography in the Mississippi watershed. But there are signs of hope. For a long time, Bowder says farmers were resistant to hearing about the problem and their contributions to it. Knowing about it would mean having to carry the burden of fixing it. But he says that attitude is changing, and that attitude shift could be what it takes to help keep drinking water safe. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM. Today we're listening to Watching Our Water. Here's Harvest Public Media's Grant Gerlach in Nebraska.
Living in the Platte River Valley in central Nebraska means understanding that the water in your well may contain high levels of nitrates and may not be safe to drink. Ken Syme lives near the town of Chapman, and he learned that lesson long ago.
When our first son was born in 1980, we actually put a distiller in for our drinking water here in the house. And at that time, our water level was at 12 parts per million.
That's over the legal limit for public water systems. But Syme says some wells in the valley contain nitrates at dangerous levels two or three times that. For Syme, this problem is personal because he's a farmer. He and his sons grow about 1,000 acres of corn and soybeans. Some of those nitrates probably come from his farm.
That really puts it in perspective of we need to rein this in and get some management going, because if we continue at this rate, what's our water going to be like in another 40 years?
Two things happening on Syme's farm are good examples of how corn growers are trying to make things better. They're using technology to put less nitrogen on the field and conservation measures to hold on to what's already there. Let's start with technology. Years ago, farmers would spread fertilizer evenly across their fields. Some plants would get more than they could use. Today, researchers at the University of Nebraska are studying how to spoon-feed corn with just the nutrients plants need, no excess. They call it Project Sense. In July, a Project Sense sprayer rolled through one of Ken Syme's fields. The sensors look at a row of corn, how big and green it is. Then the sprayer shoots just enough fertilizer on the plants to push them through harvest. Project Sense director Richard Ferguson says that leaves fewer nitrates in the soil that can move into water.
If we're applying less fertilizer and achieving basically the same yield, that's going to reduce the environmental impact.
Project Sense is still an experiment, but with soil and water testing, farmers already have tools to help them be precise with fertilizer. Still, some nitrates are always left behind. In Nebraska, they leach into the aquifer. In Iowa, they wash off into rivers. The city of Des Moines is suing upstream water districts because its water supply is so contaminated. That's where the Syme's second strategy comes in.
This right here is the common vetch.
Ken Syme's son Noah digs a shovel of vetch, cover crops between rows of corn. Cover crops like this vetch or rye, even kale, grow after the corn is harvested, keeping live roots in the ground. The Symes want those roots to hold soil and water, but the roots also hold nitrates on fields and keep them out of streams.
If you're holding that moisture in place rather than just letting it go through, we know that we're doing a better job of holding everything in place.
So if you grow plants to hold nitrates in the soil and spoon feed fertilizer, problem solved, right?
If I would just walk more, I would weigh less. It sounds really easy when you say it, but it's doing it.
John Heaston is a Nebraska conservationist who helps farmers work with technology. Heaston says the new tools farmers have are effective. It's just not enough farmers are buying in.
We have guys that lean into this stuff and they've got a techno lust and want to learn this. And then you have other guys that, you know, is pretty sure the internet is on computers.
Surveys by the U.S. Department of Agriculture show farmers in the Corn Belt are the least likely to use cover crops and have the most room for improvement on nitrogen management. Farmer Ken Syme says public pressure to address water quality is not going away. And he realizes that if farmers don't decide how to fix the problem, perhaps the government will.
If we won't be stewards ourselves, someone will have to help us be a steward.
Producers like the Symes are doing their share, but the effort across the landscape is inconsistent. And so far, so are the results. Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM. And today we're exploring the waterways that connect the Midwest with the Gulf of Mexico with reporters from Harvest Public Media. Here's reporter Amy Mayer.
Roger Zylstra stops his red GMC Sierra and tromps into a ditch.
Here is one of the tile. That's where it outlets.
He points to a pipe, maybe 6 to 8 inches in diameter. Water that drains from his farm fields collects in pipes like this one and travels underground until it finally drips out here into a road culvert. This water is called runoff.
If you come here after a heavy rain, do you see it really pouring out?
Yeah, it would have a lot more water in it.
Farm runoff like this can contain harmful chemicals, nitrates from fertilizer the plants don't absorb, or excess pesticides. You might think a landmark environmental law like the Clean Water Act would force farmers or landowners to prevent that kind of pollution, the way it bars factories from dumping toxins into rivers. But the Clean Water Act has no power to stop agricultural runoff. Farm groups have vocally opposed regulation, fearing it will impose specific conservation requirements across the board. While they have urged farmers to do better, voluntary measures so far are having a limited impact.
That was where the rye cover was.
Zylstra raises hogs and grows corn and soybeans. In an effort to improve soil health, he also planted a cover crop here. These off-season plants also keep potential toxins out of the water. He recognizes that
if we don't learn how to be better stewards of the soil and water, that we're going to end up regulated.
The use of cover crops has expanded widely in recent years, but the amount of farmland potentially sending unwanted chemicals downriver has exploded. Since the Clean Water Act was passed in 1972, the number of acres growing corn and soybeans in this country has increased by more than 50%. And the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, blamed in part on pollution from Midwest farm runoff, has grown. In response, several Midwest states, including Iowa, have created nutrient reduction strategies to help clean up the water.
There's nothing about it that's enforceable.
That's Neil Hamilton, director of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University in Des Moines. Iowa's plan is voluntary, and Hamilton says, while it's long on science and goals, it's very thin on implementation.
The nutrient reduction strategy has also had the political effect or benefit, depending on where you sit, as being able to try to delay or defer conversations about other things.
Things, Hamilton says, like implementing a sales tax increase to fund water quality projects. Iowa voters approved one in 2010, but it's still not in place. The Des Moines Water Utility has sued upriver drainage districts, alleging they've allowed pollutants from farm fields to poison public waters. Hamilton says the suit raises real legal questions, but no court decision will make the water cleaner.
We aren't going to be able to litigate our way there.
Companies have joined farm nonprofits and state and federal governments to offer money to farmers so they will try cover crops and other techniques to reduce runoff. The example of these early adopters can be a powerful tool to push other farmers to try new conservation practices.
Hi.
Hi. Come on in.
Bryce Angbers is Roger Zylstra's neighbor and farming partner.
I get to see all of his data from our yield monitor. We share a combine together. So, we're keeping a very close eye on how it's working.
Angbers says he likes what he's seen from his neighbor's cover crops. He's trying some, too. But he also points out that farming is cleaner than it was decades ago.
I'm polluting much, much less than what I ever did before.
He has made changes, particularly with livestock and manure management. But advocates for water quality insist comparisons to yesteryear aren't the point. The point is to hit agreed-upon goals to reverse the current problems. And repeatedly, the Midwest's voluntary approach has failed to do that. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Today, we're examining contamination in rivers that unite the Midwest with reporters from Harvest Public Media. Here's reporter Peggy Lowe from Kansas City.
Standing on a platform above the Missouri River at the Kansas City Water Services intake plant is like being on the deck of a large ship. Electric turbines create a hum you can feel as you grip the railing. Water the color of chocolate milk is sucked up and forced through screens below.
And the Missouri River drains 1/6 of the United States, so there's a lot of stuff that can affect the water quality in the river.
David Green is lab manager at KC Water. He says enough water to supply Kansas City with drinking water for a day flows by this point every 17 minutes. It's his job to make sure that enormous volume of water is clean. The most frequently detected contaminant, he says, is bacteria from sewage dumped in upstream. But there's also the annual problem of atrazine, the popular weed killer that's among the most common contaminants in U.S. waters. It's used mostly on cornfields.
But we actually test it every day during runoff season in the spring because we know that the atrazine is coming, so we measure it more frequently.
Cities forced to clean up polluted runoff from farms upstream are growing more vocal about the problem. In Iowa, the Des Moines Water Works has filed a federal lawsuit hoping to force three drainage districts to place more regulations on farmers. Toledo, Ohio has also seen huge problems. Yet in Kansas City, Green says he's seeing about 25% less atrazine in the water than in the past. He credits better management practices by farmers. Cities and suburbs play a part in water pollution, too. The problems are varied. We can point to our perfect lawns and golf courses and wonder about all the stuff it takes to keep them so green. Often, it's pesticides. A stunning 90% of U.S. urban streams contained concentrations of pesticides that could hurt aquatic life, according to a study by the U.S. Geological Survey.
The general rule that what you find in the environment is frequently a reflection of what you use.
Barbara Mahler is a research hydrologist with the Geological Survey. But those who are critical of farm country should also look at their own backyard. Literally. Glyphosate, what we know as Roundup, is the number two seller in what's called the home and garden sector, and millions of pounds of the product is used every year.
The fact that we use atrazine much more heavily in rural areas and agricultural areas than in urban areas is reflected by what we find in the streams, and the fact that we use a lot of glyphosate in urban areas is also reflected in what we find in the streams.
Another issue, the dramatic Midwestern storms often overload storm water systems, or in some cities, that system is just old. Karen Flournoy of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says stormwater is a big contributor to urban water pollution.
We have streets, driveways, buildings. So when it rains and all of that runoff carries a variety of pollutants, and it carries sediment, it can carry chemicals, pesticides, oil, just a variety of constituents that end up in the streams.
Storm water systems aren't sexy, but they are a big deal. 6 years ago, Kansas City settled a lawsuit brought by the U.S. Justice Department for violations of the Clean Water Act. The city promised to spend $2.5 billion over the next 25 years to reduce pollution levels in urban stormwater.
That's the Missouri River from this morning.
Back at David Green's lab at KC Water Services, he holds up a gallon jug filled with water pulled from the Missouri River that morning for testing. He says he does hundreds of tests a day. Meanwhile, the Geological Survey recently did some of the first testing for glyphosate in urban streams, some south of Kansas City, and we'll learn the results in a couple months. Peggy Lowe, Harvest Public Media.
When heavy rains wash through farm country, chemicals from agricultural fields spill into small tributaries that eventually make their way to the Gulf of Mexico. For Harvest Public Media's special series, Watching Our Water, here's Christopher Husted.
Researchers call it the dead zone, since many fish, shrimp, and crabs can't live near the mouth of the Mississippi River in the northern Gulf of Mexico. On a map, it's roughly the size of Connecticut and Rhode Island combined, more than 6,000 square miles, according to recent projections. Matt Rota is with the environmental group Gulf Restoration Network.
This dead zone forms because nitrogen phosphorus pollution flowing from agricultural fields, because we use it as fertilizer, flowing from sewage treatment plants, from concentrated animal feeding operations, from industrial sources, flows down the Mississippi River.
As river water from Montana to Pennsylvania drains into the Gulf, massive amounts of nitrogen and phosphorus create blooms of algae. When the algae dies and drifts to the bottom, it sucks the oxygen out of the water, making the area inhospitable to seafood. It's called hypoxia. Federal officials planned to reduce the dead zone to about a third of its current estimated size by 2015. But in the face of a growing problem, they recently kicked that can down the road another 20 years.
If you could target just a few of these major producers and get them to do the right thing and have the people that are renting the land do the right thing, that's where you could be making some more difference.
Upstream farmers can't just stop using fertilizer and pesticides altogether without massive changes in our food system. So what can they do? Researchers are looking at two strategies they're testing in the Midwest to help mitigate the dead zone in the Gulf. The first, adding what's called a riparian buffer, planting vegetation along streams. Ranjith Uduwada, a professor at the University of Missouri, is trying to get farmers to add four kinds of plants to separate a cornfield from a water source.
Next to the stream, we'll have a fast-growing tree species that can tolerate water.
Like cottonwood.
Then next to that is a slow-growing, high-value trees.
Maybe black walnut.
Then shrubs and grasses.
Research shows these buffer zones filter the nitrogen or phosphorus runoff before it gets to the river. Ultimately, Uduwada says no farmer wants to contribute to pollution.
They know the benefits. Everybody knows benefits of buffers, water quality, soil quality, wildlife, everything.
He's studying whether it's economically feasible for farmers to add the extra lines of vegetation by selling the trees for lumber or the grass for biofuel. The second strategy to shrink the dead zone lies in restoring the river floodplains.
It's going to be a little bit loud.
On a hot September afternoon near Rocheport, Missouri, Rob Jacobson, a hydrologist with U.S. Geological Survey, guides a speedboat along the Missouri River. He says some of the most productive agricultural areas are located along big rivers in floodplains. Farmers raise crops there, add inputs, then a flood comes along.
And so if there was, you know, anhydrous ammonia that had been applied to that field, if there was atrazine that had been applied to the field, or glyphosate, it'd have a pretty direct route into the river.
Jacobson says that's where reestablishing wetlands in the floodplains can help.
So there's a hope that some of that flooding of these floodplain wetlands would reduce nitrogen loads.
Where's that at now?
Yeah, this floodplain right here.
Jacobson points out the lush Overton Bottoms Conservation Area. Parts of it used to be farmland, but conservation officials have been moving the levees back and returning it to its original form as a floodplain wetland. The native plants here, like the riparian buffer, can act as a filter for chemicals flushing down the river. But while Jacobson says these wetlands help denitrify the water, it's, well, only a drop in the bucket.
What we see here at Overton and these conservation lands would have to be replicated through most of the river valley to really have an effect on the amount of nitrogen that's in the system right now.
Until then, Jacobson says he hopes more federal programs and conservation efforts can incentivize farmers and landowners upstream on the river to protect the water downstream in the Gulf. Christopher Husted, Harvest Public Media.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM, and we've been listening to Watching Our Water, a special series from Harvest Public Media. Thank you for joining us today on Intersection, and thank you to Harvest Public Media reporters Luke Runyon, Grant Gerlach, Amy Mayer, Peggy Lowe, and Christopher Husted. Our music is Montana Skies. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here on KBIA 91.3 FM.